Welcome to the Latter Gay Stories Podcast, the show that features real people, real stories, and real talk. This is the intersection of sexuality and reality. Now, here's the voice of the show, Kyle Ashworth.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Latter Gay Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Ashworth, and as always, another great episode we have prepared for you today. The Latter Gay Stories Podcast is your opportunity to better understand the intersection of sexuality and reality, where it meets at LGBTQ Avenue and LDS Street. If you're catching this podcast episode on the video version through one of our players like Facebook, on Facebook Live, or catching it as we're broadcasting, or on YouTube, on our YouTube channel, we invite you to place a comment below and ask a question throughout the episode, and that'll give you an opportunity to get a response directly from myself or the guest or the community. We always love interaction because it does give you and I an opportunity to interact with the guest, but also to create a little bit more of a conversation regarding the topics that we talk about on the podcast episodes. And if you are following along on the audio versions, we invite you to like and subscribe to the channel there where you're listening to this episode. And it'll give us an opportunity to continue sharing stories like this to a wider and broader community. And as always, we do appreciate every share, every like, and every comment we get, even on social media. It does help us to continue the spread of the message. So the episode today is really fascinating. A good friend of mine that I met a few years ago has a fascinating story. And I wanted to be able to share that story with the podcast audience. And he's been on my mind for a while, and for some reason, maybe this is the time that we strike the iron. But I want to welcome to the Latter Gay Stories podcast, Kendrick Willis.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
I'm really excited to have this podcast episode because I think you have a really unique story. It's a fun story, but rarely on a LDS, LGBT-themed podcast like this, do we get converts. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to bring in your story, not only as a gay man, mm-hmm. but a convert to the church, mm-hmm. and also a person of color. So mm-hmm. we're covering a lot of areas in a single yes. podcast.
Yes, we are.
And we both share a love of collard greens.
Yes. So I definitely want my collard greens now. Like, seriously.
We're not going to find any here.
I know. I'll just shop at Walmart and then I'll be all right. No worries.
Good luck.
Yes. I need all the luck I can get.
So, Kendrick, tell us about yourself.
Well, I am from Tuskegee, Alabama, born and raised. I am the oldest of three kids. I've been raised by my mother since I was young. My dad is still alive. I just haven't talked to him in over 15 years. I have three nephews and two nieces. I actually seen my nephew recently over the Christmas break, and I got to hold him for the first time.
Yay.
Yeah, so it was really awesome. I had a good time with
him. So we're going to add Diva and Gunkle to the list.
Yes, I am a Gunkle. Yes, yes, yes. And it's fun, and I love it. I love it a lot. I joined the church back in October 24th, 2007. That was when I was a senior in high school. I didn't even know the church existed where my hometown was, because there was a spot past the road where it was hidden in between like big trees, and it was like a slump little drive, little parkway, kind of just hidden behind there. And I didn't even know there was a church building until I actually visited it, and then it was a church building. So it was just really non-existent. When I first joined the church, it was really great. Like, it was nice and spiritual and everything, and it was going great. And I actually found out I had a cousin and that was going to that church. I didn't find out he was my cousin until later, a few years later, because we've hung out a lot. And, you know, we had a good connection, good friendship and everything. And then, you know, he told me he was gay at first. And I didn't know that at all. I mean, I had the vibes, but But I didn't know that at all. So I just couldn't confirm it for sure. Then ever since then, I decided I wanted to go on a mission, and I served in the New York North mission from...
Oh, I want to back up just a little bit.
Yes.
Because I think our audience might be interested in learning how you found the church. Or how did the church find you?
Oh, yeah. For sure. So, it's funny because it wasn't through the missionaries at all. It was from a couple of friends of mine, they were doing the proselyting and everything. They were doing, helping missionaries out, I think, during that time frame. And so that's when they introduced the Book of Mormon to me. And I did everything. I read it during the time frame. It's funny because I didn't read what they told me to read, which I think is funny. But I did find out when I understood some of the truth about it was when I was reading in Alma 32. And that's where my understanding of faith was very different. And so I thought it was just, you know, you believe and then you're good to go. But once I read that chapter specifically, it described faith in a different way that I would never imagine it being. And so that's where, once I started finding out stuff of that nature, that's when I knew some of the truth of it. And so that's when I was taking the discussions, and everything was going well. I went to church, saw what it was. Everything was very different. It's predominantly Baptist and Methodist where I'm from, for sure, because it's a Bible Belt. So, but it was very different. It was a different environment, different kind of atmosphere. And so I thought, okay, maybe this could work out. So then it was a discrepancy where my mom was hesitant. My mom's not like a church going person, not like that. She's not predominantly Baptist or anything. I could say she is, but I don't think she goes to church on that level. She'll go, but not on that level of as most people in the South would. So, but she still believes in God and Jesus and everything like that. But I did somehow convince her to let me be baptized in the church. But it was one of my friends that encouraged me to have faith. And then once I did that, that's when it happened. So during that time frame, that's when I chose my friend to baptize me in the church. And so that's how I became a member of the church.
Gotcha. So friends introduced, so back to the White Handbook days.
Yes.
Yeah, they were using the member referrals, which is highest on the list for most amount of convert baptism. So there you go.
Right.
Good missionaries.
Yes.
Then you said that you were called to serve.
Right.
What were your thoughts, feelings, excitement around serving?
I was very excited, but it's funny that, oh my goodness, when I got my call, my friend literally predicted where I was going. On the dot, on the money, when I read it. I read it silently first before I said it out loud. And then he literally said, before I even opened the letter, New York North Mission. He literally said that. And then I open it and I look, what? I was really shocked. I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. He really predicted where I was going. And so, yes, I was excited. It was magnificent. It was great during the time. And my mom knew about it. And she, of course, it's that pushback when it comes to moms. Because sometimes, you know, you're ambitious of doing something. And then, you know, your parents, you know, they want to, you know, hold on a little more, you know, to the babies, you know, that's really what it is. But She decided that I had to do it. So that's when I did it. So it was really hard for sure, leaving my mom, because she was the only parent that has been there for me. And so, but other than that, it was a great thing.
And you were the only boy.
Yes, I was the only boy and the oldest boy. So
yeah, so you were her everything.
I know. I will say this, you know, she's not the lovey-dovey type of mom, but she loves on you, but it's like, okay, I love you, but I'm gonna let you go ahead and do what you gotta do. That's really how my mom loves, really. You know, she's gonna get on me, but she's not gonna straddle me at the same time. That's how that love is.
So you get into the mission field. Uh-huh. This is probably the point where you start feeling that I'm a little different. you left a household of all girls.
Right.
And now you're in a mission. Yep. Surrounded by
right.
men.
Right.
Let's talk about that.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so when I first get into the mission field, it was snowing, of course, because I left in January. I got to the MTC in January. A middle of January, and I left the MTC at the beginning of February. And so that's when we went to New York. And it was snowing, like I was saying. And when I first got to my mission department, cars got grounded. So, you know, they let you know, like, when cars are grounded and stuff like that when it comes to the weather being bad. So, yeah, it was an interesting experience being with all men, but, for me, I was that type of person where, like, I would just have joy for some odd reason, you know, just that happy-go-lucky type of person at the time.
I could never tell. You've always seemed so unhappy.
Well, I guess it depends on what the setting is, but When it came to that, it was very different. Like, I was focused, ready to go. You know, I didn't know anything, so I was just there. So, I mean, the interactions were great and everything, but that's when I started to realize, like, oh my goodness, like, I'm really attracted to guys. Like, that's where the attractions became really strong. And so it was really tough for me. Like, it's like, no matter what, if I touch him, like, just like a pat on the shoulder, be like, hey, how you doing? You know, stuff like that. Just innocent touching. And it would just happen. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, what am I gonna do? Like, I can't really focus because I have this to deal with. It was really hard for me to focus on serving people and try to be there for someone else while I had this going on. With even if the guys were cute or not, it didn't matter. It still happened. And so that's where I had to really think about this. And so it took me a very long while through the whole mission field, because I've had a point where I wanted to quit the mission, because not only when it came to the attractions to guys, but it was really tough as it was anyway. But
let's talk about the things that were tough.
Yes.
So yeah, walk us down that path. Mm-hmm. Tell us what things you were dealing with. And the reason why I kind of want to venture down this, you've got a unique perspective. Mm-hmm. There are people who listen to this podcast who are preparing to serve a mission.
Right.
There are parents who know their children are gay, mm-hmm. who also are still mm-hmm. desirous to serve a mission.
Right.
So walk us down that path and kind of give our listeners and viewers an idea as to what your experience was like trying to manage those two feelings. The one where you've got the church, but right. you also got this identity and what's happening and flourishing and blossoming inside.
Mm-hmm. All right. So this is where you have to have your mental strength come in. It's because you have love for these things, but it's like it's like a mental and a spiritual tug of war. That's really what you're going to be feeling like, because you want to go out there and help people, but at the same time, it's like once you're around a certain gender that you like, that's where it's going to be tough, because it's like you want to help the person, but you don't want to deceive the person at the same time. And so that's where you're going to have that battle. It's all about that mental strength. And so for me, what I did was I had to just push through no matter how tough it got. And I had to keep reminding myself what I was there for. And yes, of course, it's still going to happen. Of course, you know, sometimes you have to just put it through in the back burner and not really think about it too much. And so as long as you distract your thoughts on something else that's worthwhile, it'll help you get through it. And so what I had to do was think of other things instead of trying to go down the path where I have to, you know, jump at a man or jump at a guy, you know. So sure. That's really what that was about.
I was speaking to a few college-age students, mm-hmm. Who were discussing this concept of deal-making with God, where they said, you know, I am who I am.
Right.
And I think maybe serving a mission would give me an opportunity to serve, jump in, give it everything, mm-hmm. return honorably, mm-hmm. and in exchange, God might take this from me and make me less gay because of my service. Mm-mm. How do you respond to that type of idea?
Good question. I had that same thought. I had that same thing. I'm thinking, okay. Because this was before I even got into the mission field. I'm thinking, okay, maybe I can just get rid of this, not think about anything of that type of sort. Oh, no. Just forget it. It's not going to go away, okay? Like, the attraction, if you're attracted to somebody, if you love on somebody, that's not going to go away. Despite what you do in life, whether it's good, bad, or whatever it is, it's not going to go away. It's not going to make you less gay than where you are. Like, it's being gay, that doesn't have any levels to it. It's not a video game. That's not going to happen. This is who you are. You have to just understand how to balance that within your life. That's what I had to learn. I had to do the same thing because I thought it was going to take it away from myself. No, it's not going to happen. Mm-mm. No.
Did you come out to anybody on your mission?
No, I did not. I did not come out to anyone on my mission. I came out after my mission. That was a few years ago, a few years after that.
So before we jump into the coming out story, mm-hmm. did you teach anybody on your mission that was somewhere on the LGBTQ spectrum?
No, I have not. And that is kind of a shocker because I'm in New York City. Like, yeah. That's where some of the LGBT is located. But no, I have not taught anyone that has been in the LGBT spectrum. No, mm-mm. I haven't.
So you end up coming home to Alabama,
right?
Off the airplane from mm-hmm. the mission. All these new feelings stirring inside. They obviously right. didn't go away after no. faithful service.
No.
You did mention at some point you had considered going home, mm-hmm. leaving your mission early as mm-hmm. you were going through those personal and mental struggles.
Right.
You get off the airplane. You say to yourself, "I'm still gay." Mm-hmm. Where do you move forward, or how do you move?
So for me, I was very proud of myself for sticking with it and finishing, because I did have that back in my mind where, you know, if you finish early, I'm going to get judged, you know? And so that was another motivator of why I wanted to finish as well. But when I got home, it was a good feeling, because I was ready to go. I was tired. I was done. I was ready to go. But, my attractions were still there, of course. What I wanted to do was I wanted to go to school, and that was one thing that was on the on my mind before I even left for my mission, because I wanted to make my mom proud too, because that's really what she wanted me to do. Mm-hmm. And what better school than BYU Idaho, right? You know, a spiritual school, you know, that's gonna just help me out with my problems. I had that mentality again. It came back to me again, where I thought, oh, it's gonna help my problems again. You know, I fell for the bait again. And so I did enroll there. And I immediately, a couple of days later, I got accepted. I did everything I had to do, turned my AC scores in, transcript, did all of those things. And I got enrolled, got accepted. My first day of college was going to be in September of 2012. And so I had to get a job. So I got a job at McDonald's for a few months from May until September. And so then that's where I'm thinking, okay, good school. I get up in Idaho. Good school. Didn't know anything, of course. Just blind eye. But that's where I started noticing some things about, it wasn't really mostly when it came to my attractions, honestly. It was more of the culture. That's what I noticed the most when it came to the culture. And then I had to take a back pedal. I said, why did I do that?
You're talking about the LDS culture.
Correct. Yes.
What was the rub there? What were you noticing?
So what I was noticing was that, I mean, mostly members, of course. Yes. It was how they approached life. That's really what it was for me that threw me over a loop. It was a lot of the same perspectives. It was a lot of the maturity level was down, and how people would say and do rote things, meaning like it was like a rehearsed type of thing. It was like a 20 questions type of deal, and so that's what rubbed me the wrong way.
Robots.
Right.
Yeah, that's how you get out of that.
Yes. That's really what it was.
So you get to the point where you're ready to come out. Mm-hmm. Was it just the cultural dichotomy of Mormonism? You were tired of being on a campus of robots and you said, I've got to be different? Or let's talk about your coming out experience.
Okay. So it wasn't because of the culture that drove me to come out. My determining factor was it kept eating away at me. And I was just like, I'm done. I'm sick and tired of it. You know what? I've searched. I've asked myself. I've done everything all I can do. I can't get rid of it. I can't. No matter what I do, I can't get rid of this. I cannot. So that's when, in the summer of 2014, that's when I came out. I came out over Facebook. And it was interesting. I surprisingly got a lot of support on Facebook. And it was on a Sunday, now I think about it. But I got a call from my mom. And I was just thinking in my mind, oh no. I do not. I really hope that she will not get on my case. Mm-hmm. I really hope not. And so that's when my mom called me, and then I picked up the phone. Well, I picked up the phone, and she surprisingly was just like, "It's your life. You do what you have to do." And that was basically the butt of the conversation. And I was surprised because those fears that I had didn't happen.
The feelings of fear.
Right.
And rejection from your mother.
Correct. Right. And I was concerned about that because, I mean, you know, in the South, you know, we it's mostly tradition when it comes to not only, you know, living, but just religion, food, sports, anything traditionally sound, that's what we deal with, you know? And so I was afraid of that. And then this happens. I'm like, oh, okay. But then that's when I felt relief. Because sometimes sometimes once you hold it in for so long, you know, it eats away in you inside. And so that's where you have to take the courage to come out. It's not easy, of course, but it took me a long time, even some other folks longer. But
the pain of living closeted was greater than the pain that could be inflicted by coming out.
Correct.
That was kind of the breaking point.
Correct.
You look at it and say, it hurts so much to keep this inside that no matter what someone said to me, it can't hurt any worse.
Right.
Therefore, you made the move.
Correct. Yes. And it wasn't only just that. Just hearing a lot of negativity towards it as well. That was another thing that drove me to come out too, because I've read it, heard it, everything. And I'm like, why is this a bad thing? You know, I just really didn't understand it. And so that's another driving force of why I came out.
So your mother took it okay?
Yeah.
What about your sisters?
My sisters, I really haven't talked to them much about it, honestly. I just don't think they are used to me in this setting yet. Mm-hmm. That's really what it is. Because they really haven't seen my personality based off of me being gay and everything. Like, when it comes to our family dynamic, it's just a chill dynamic. Like, you know, if we got something going on together, we just spend time together. It really never comes up. And unless if I talk about it, it never comes up anywhere else.
Which actually isn't the worst strategy.
No,
it's not something you have to focus on.
It's not. Yeah, I think they're not used to it fully. I think that's what it is, honestly. So
you are in Rexburg, Idaho,
yes.
Attending school at BYU, Idaho.
Yes.
As an openly gay man.
Yes.
Let's talk about that journey, because that in itself is a journey.
Ooh, yeah, that is a journey, all right. Well, it's more downs than ups, I will say. So I've looked for resources, of course, when it comes to being gay and stuff. Of course, I have to do that. I did find a group of friends, that had this organization for USGA, Understanding Same Gender Attraction, you know, that stuff. And so I joined that group for a couple of years. I mean, it was nice. I learned a lot based on the community, because since I came out, I have to learn about the community.
Sure.
So I learned a lot of things. And mostly for me, what I got out of it at the time was, you know, we were united together, and we were sticking up for one another. And so that was where I started to feel a little more love there. And of course, you know, students leave, students graduate, and so leadership changes and all that and everything. But I stopped going there. Because of course, you know, when it comes to divas, honey, with their drama, I didn't want to be a part of none of that. So
you're okay creating your own drama and being your own diva, but no other divas.
No. Mm-mm. I don't have time for other people's drama and them gonna lump me into the drama. So I was like, no. That's when I stopped going. But I did appreciate what I learned from there. The turning point for me in my journey was when I came to Pride for the first time in 2017.
Salt Lake City Pride?
Salt Lake City Pride, yes. That was my first one. Because I kept missing them during that time frame because I had to work. And I'm like, because, you know, they would have Pride in Idaho Falls, they would have it in Pocatello and Boise, but I couldn't make it because I had to work. So I finally attend one, and it was really amazing. And I understood a lot more about myself, because I had those questions where, do I have to fit the stereotype? You know, do I have to be like this when it comes to me being gay? Like, you know, all of that type of stuff. I was so concerned about that too. You know, because I've been around my friends, and they would talk about movies, they would talk about drag, they would talk about pop culture, you know, all that type of stuff. And I'm just like, do I really have to know this? In my mind, I'm not a movie goer. Like, I go at a month after it's gone. Like, I don't go to movies. I don't think about that. The only thing I think about is sports, getting my money. Let me see. Getting ready and go in the morning. Like, I don't think about all of that. I just think about regular routine stuff. So, but coming to Salt Lake Pride changed my mind. It changed my perspective on how I can balance myself being gay and still having my same masculinity. So that's where I was just like, okay, I can still be who I am. This is just going to be a part of me. And so that was kind of the ups of my journey. But the downside of my journey is it still lacks the support, honestly. And what I mean by support, I mean, it's not the support that you really that you yearn for. For example, it's more religious support, let's just say that, mm-hmm. versus the real love, the unconditional type of atmosphere that I would rather have. That's what's missing. And I do have some friends that are really nice, but I feel like when it comes to my journey specifically, the unconditional love is what I'm missing. That's the downside of being in Rexburg.
And I want to explore that a little bit. Do you think that's attributed to the Mormon culture, the LDS culture, the fact that it is very predominantly LDS and there's mm-hmm. not that widespread exposure to this right. topic?
Yes, exactly.
Or do you think it's the doctrine and policy side of the church that just says, avoid the appearance of evil and you appear to be evil. Mm-hmm. What you're doing is against a policy or mm-hmm. against a doctrine. Mm-hmm. How do we navigate that road?
I think it's a mixture of both, because I've seen it around and I've had that effect on me. I've had experiences where I would get turned into the honor code office because of me being gay anyway. That happened to me twice. Back in 2014, I had an incident. And in 2019, that was where I was going through a tumultuous time. I had suicidal thoughts at that time frame, and it wasn't because of me being gay or anything. It had something to do with sports. So my friend was coming over to calm me down and everything, kind of get my mind right. Cause he's been very supportive. He's been very supportive, ally that I have. So then all of a sudden next morning I get a call from the honor code office. I'm like, what? For what? You know, I didn't do anything. I mean, curfew, I understood, but I'm like, what else? And then that's when my roommate turned me in, thinking I was in cahoots with my friend, which I'm like, he's straighter than a pencil. Come on, really? Like, he literally didn't ask me what was going on. He didn't really question me what was happening. Nothing. I couldn't even speak a word because I was really going through it. But that's the example that I'm talking about, is that, you know, it's that lack of empathy. That's really what it is, honestly. And I get that when it comes to policy, like, I understand we have to follow policy and stuff like that. But it's like, come on, where's the empathy here? Like, stop using policy to try to dictate your arguments. It's like, my biggest thing is that don't use revelation as your argument. I hear that a lot. I hear that a ton. And I'm just like, revelation is not really, it. You got to get to the point here. Like, okay, God did this, God did that. Yes, I got that. Next. Can we change? Can you say something else? That's where that road hits. It's that they use revelation to try to prove a point. And for me, I'm not having it.
You forget the human element.
Exactly.
In all of this.
Correct.
Yeah, that's lost.
That's lost. Exactly. And for that's where I came to the point where I'm like, I cannot be a part of a mold where there's no differentiation, there's no growth outside of the sources that we have, and there's no unconditional love spread. I can't be a part of that.
Recently, the church made updates to the handbook. We've also been involved in honor code changes back and forth.
Yes.
If you were the administrator of the honor code office, what would you do to help embedder this topic?
Oh, my goodness. If that was me? Oh, man, that's a good question. Thinking of that scenario, because I did do a little research looking at the affirmation pages and stuff like that and what was going on, and hearing about some people have said, like, firsthand they went to the office. Like, if I was the administrator, me not being a part of the LGBT spectrum, I would have told them straightforward instead of trying to lead them in a wishy-washy path. If I was in there, I would have been like, no, we can't do this, we can't do that. You know, straightforward, honestly and genuinely. But what they did was they removed it, but all of a sudden they changed it again. And so that's where I drew the line. But for me, if I was the administrator, like I said, I would let them know straight up if I didn't believe in it or I wasn't a part of it or anything, I would have told them, hey, this is against the honor code, this is this. So that's what I would have done. But me, where I'm at now, if I was the administrator how I am now, I would have been like, hey, it's nothing against it. There's nothing against it. I would have kept it that way instead of, you know, even if I were to lose my job, I would have said, hey, this is gone. This is what it means. This is what it is. Like, I would have told them honestly what it meant instead of going around and not explaining the details. Like, that's where I draw the line. Like, they're not authentic.
It's back to your earlier point that they are putting policy and maybe a perspective that doesn't fully understand the LGBTQ experience ahead of personal empathy.
Right.
And that can be very damaging.
It can be. Right. And that's where I've understood how my conversations with people are. And it's not really anything inappropriate either. Like, what I would just speak about just life in general or anything. Like, I would think about just other things in life. Like, I would use other resources, you know, not necessarily the Book of Mormon and all the other scriptures and stuff. You know, I would think of other things, like think of other perspectives that are truthful in life. And I try to bring that to the table, you know, but it's really hard. It's really hard in the LDS culture because of that melting pot mentality and that fear of God mentality of doing something that may be out of their comfort zone. I think that's really what it is. It's just they're too comfortable. They're too comfortable in their own skin to take a risk in life. And that's where it's preventing them from growing outside of that comfort zone.
What do you, and maybe we help this topic by trying to better understand or even create methods of mm-hmm. getting people involved, members of the church involved in this topic. Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of people, especially listeners of this podcast, the LGBT topic meant nothing for the overwhelming majority until someone in their family came out.
Right.
Or until they become personally involved with someone who identified on the spectrum.
Right.
How do we reach those people who have yet to find out that they have a family member that identifies as LGBTQ? Mm-hmm. How can we reach into the church to say, pay attention to this, show more empathy, mm-hmm. here are resources, what do mm-hmm. we do? I mean, I know I'm throwing the whole world on your shoulders now, but what ideas, like, coming from your perspective, mm-hmm. What ideas do you have?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so when it comes to not knowing that a family member or someone close to you is in the LGBT spectrum, you have to ask genuinely, and you're not have an agenda. That's number one, because sometimes when you talk about this, when you talk about this with people, they ask those burning questions about the religion-based questions. Will you have a family? Will you do this? And stuff like that. Don't have an agenda. That's one idea, because you're thinking that that specific person is a project or an outcast, versus you trying to grow with them and see what you can do to be more supporting and more loving. That's what I would ask genuine questions based on their experience, and learn how they were embarked in their journey. That's number one. Another thing we could do is it's not just listening to us. You have to show us. That's another thing, because I'm all about action. You can speak to me all you want to about your hobbies, your love life, all of that type of stuff. It doesn't matter to me. Action shows me who you are.
Love is not a noun. It's a verb.
It's a verb. Exactly. It's not a noun. It's a verb. Exactly. You got to show it. I preach that so many times to these students up here, even at church, even in regular conversations. I say that all the time. You have to show me. If you don't show me, forget it. I'm not going to believe anything you tell me. You have to show me the love. You have to show me the support. And you have to show me that you're there for me. You can't just tell me. You can't just tell me.
Oh, but now you sound like a doubting Thomas.
Right, exactly. You can't just tell me. You could tell me until you're blue in the face until you reach Pluto. But you must show. That's how you're going to get through, not only to us as LGBT community, but you're going to show everybody that you're there, that you're there. That's really what it is, you know. And another thing is I just want to make sure that I'm going to get this right. You can hold events as well, you know, just like you were saying, like the North Star Conference. That's one thing. If you have those members of the church that are struggling to make a decision on to stay with the church or not, you know, you could provide that as a resource, because I'm sure they have good resources at the North Star Conference, the North Star organization, based off of that as well. You could recommend that.
Yeah, so you're bringing up North Star. There are a variety of groups out there who help train church leaders in this topic. Mm-hmm. North Star, Affirmation, Individual. There are other podcasts that mm-hmm. also help members of the church better understand this topic. Recently, 2017, Elder M. Russell Ballard went to BYU and said, "We're not doing a good job, Mormons." That's when we could...
Pretty much.
That's when they could be called Mormons, right?
Yeah.
I don't care. we're not doing a good job at understanding and listening to the experiences of the LGBT community.
Right.
That was a little bit of a rebuke coming from an apostle.
Yes, it was.
So the takeaway from that meeting was that it was important to hear the stories and become involved, and, mm-hmm. and there are resources out there to help church members become more involved.
Right.
And I think your suggestions are good. I always am interested in trying to better understand this journey for just a lay average member of the church who doesn't have a reason to jump into LGBTQ topics.
Right.
If they don't have a child, if they don't have a friend, if they don't have a family member who's come out, mm-hmm. most wouldn't give a hill of beans
right.
To this cause or right. to better understand. And that's not just the fault of Mormonism.
Of course.
There are some things I'm not concerned about because they don't impact me
right.
and they don't mm-hmm. change me. The problem is I don't know yet that I have a child who could identify on the spectrum.
Right.
I don't know if a friend, because they have mm-hmm. yet to come out. Mm-hmm. And am I a safe place for them to come mm-hmm. out to? Do they feel comfortable mm-hmm. Coming out to me? So
right.
those are, in my opinion, those are the reasons why it's important for members to get on board mm-hmm. today.
Right.
Rather than 9 years or 9 weeks down the road when they do have a child that comes out.
Correct.
So,
yes.
so that they can... show forth love, as you talked about, instead mm-hmm. of confusion and cause more mm-hmm. problems to them.
Right, because it'll help in the sense where you're serving others as well. You're doing the due diligence not only to help yourself but help someone else, and you're giving up yourself for someone else. And that's what the church teaches, is that if you love others, and if you serve others, you're going to develop that love. And so when it comes to that, that will help.
It's back to the baptismal covenants.
Yes.
You're mourning with those who mourn. You're comforting
right.
with those who
right.
need comfort, or you're
right.
giving comfort.
Right.
You're lifting up
right.
and ministering as a disciple of Christ.
Exactly. That's what I tend to bring up a lot. I may not recite the scripture to somebody, but that's basically what I'm bringing up. I bring that up all the time. And it's just it seems like it just gets thrown out the window in a sense where they want to twist it. That's where it gets thrown out.
What is your advice to church leaders who are navigating this space?
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. When it comes to advice for church leaders, normally I am not going to be this brutally honest, but I'm going to be. Get up and move. Let's go. Stop sitting there and thinking about the next thing. Get up and do it now. That's my advice. You must try. You cannot just go on the days flying by. You must do it. You must love. You must share. And you, I will say this. You have to get out of your own way and serve those members that are in the spectrum, and not have an agenda on trying to fix them. You must go and be loving. That's what you do. That's how you get in. Literally, that's how you get in. If you hear where they're coming from, then you'll know. But don't come with an agenda, because I'm telling you, that's not going to help you. That's not going to help you understand who they are, how they operate in life, and what their journey is. You must come with open arms. You cannot come with the defense mechanism of the policies and the revelations and all that. You must come with an open heart.
Nobody knows the doctrine better than a closeted LGBT person.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Trust me. But yeah, you have to have an open heart. You must. Excuse me. If you don't have that, I'm sorry. They're not going to speak to you, period. And I've had problems with leadership. Me included. And I've avoided leadership so much up there. but it is tough, yes. Trust me, it is tough for y'all. I get it, because you have to serve everybody that's around in the ward boundaries. I get all of that. But if you specifically have members that are in the LGBT spectrum and you want to touch them, you must listen to them, period. No ifs, ands, or buts. I don't care what you got going on. You must listen to them.
It is exactly what Elder Ballard said at BYU.
Period.
We must listen to and understand.
That's it. You have to do literally what Elder Ballard said. You must do that. If you don't, I'm sorry. You're not going to get anywhere. So, yes, stop playing the shirts and skirts game and do what you're supposed to do.
What does the future look like for Kendrick?
For me, well, I will say this. So for me, when it comes to the future, after I graduate, I'm done. I've had my limits. I've had my points in life where I've thought about where my spirituality lies. And for me, it looks like I'm going to be done with the church after I graduate, for sure. But when it comes to my future plans, when it comes to my life in particular, I'm going into math education. I'm going to teach secondary ed students. Yes, that's going to be really tough for me. Not only when it comes to high schoolers, but me being gay as a teacher in there anyway. So I know that's going to be tough.
I would love you as you a would love high school teacher. You're a riot.
But yeah. I mean, I'm just who I am. I'll say that. And I guess me being gay enhanced it, I guess. I think that's really what happened.
With an extra ounce of diva.
With an extra ounce of diva in there, yes. Yeah. But that's where my future plans are. I am also going to continue to tutor independently for varsity tutors. I'm still working for them. I've been working for them for a year and a half. I've basically been exposed to high school students, middle school students, even college students, outside of Rexburg, of course. So I've tutored in the East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, and it's been a blast. It's been really a blast with that job. But yeah, other than that, when it comes to spiritual aspect, yes, I will leave. I've been a part of the church for almost 13 years, and it's been a wild ride, but it's time. It's time for me to go. It's time for me to go think about other things in life, because I'm still going to be that spiritual person for sure, because I would never deny God. I would never deny God, because I've had some great, amazing experiences when it comes to my spiritual life. And I would never deny Jesus, of course, because, he gave up himself for me. I mean, hello. But yeah, when it comes to the church itself, like, it's time. It's time for me to hit the road, Jack.
As we wrap up the last part of the podcast, what is your advice to the closeted listener who is listening to your message, and maybe even something we haven't touched much on, in this episode, but even a person of color in your same situation?
Yeah.
What is your advice to that person who listens?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when it comes to a closeted person, I would say never give up. You're worthy of anything that you set your mind to. Always develop the courage. Don't do it right away. I'll say don't do it right away, because you may not get the chance of learning about yourself during that time frame. So I would say, just keep going, keep pushing through, and keep learning about yourself. Because for me, I had to do it for 5 years in the mission field. That was really hard for me. So you just have to keep learning about yourself and who you are. And once the time comes, the time will come. And when it comes to a person of color, I mean, yes, it is hard for us in the Black community, for sure, when it comes to being gay. And with that bloodline, because of the upbringing,
tradition
and things of that nature. And so I would say, if you're a Black out there, I would say the same thing. Keep getting to know who you are, and know your strengths, weaknesses, attributes, gifts, whatever comes in life. You learn about that, and then once it develops enough, and then once you have that courage to do so, then you can go ahead and come out. But right now, I would definitely say just take your time. It doesn't have to come as easy, because for me, I used to be that person where I'd be like, it's easy, just do it. But no, I would say just take your time, relax, just find out who you are during that time frame. And once you do that, then it'll be easier for you to do so.
Is there anything we haven't touched on? Anything you wanted to talk about?
Well, let's see if I can think of anything. But I think that was it. I mean, we touched on basic points and some of the things that I would do and stuff, things of that nature. I think we touched on everything. I can't think of anything else that we should talk about.
Pop culture and politics.
Yes. Pop culture and politics.
That's a whole nother podcast episode.
I know, right?
Thank you for giving us a few minutes of your time and sitting down and sharing your story.
Oh, no problem. Anytime.
It was, you're a good friend and an old soul that I loved spending a few extra minutes with, because, and we talked about so many serious things on this episode, and we didn't get to have a lot of fun like we do in normal life.
I know, seriously. I wish I brought my fan here. Then it'd be a different story. then we would have a riot, of course. But
yeah, I wanted to make sure we didn't over-diva this whole thing.
I know. That's why I didn't bring it. So that's
keep
why.
Your props at home.
Yes. Yes. That's why I didn't want to do it. You know, I didn't want to outshine you. That's why I was just got to keep it professional, you know. Despite my buddy being right there, I'm like, okay, I got to keep professional a little bit. So
I'm a tarnished penny, so you'll always outshine me.
Oh, come on. You're gonna have some shine. I mean, come on. You're doing a good thing. You're doing a great thing. So, I mean, you're doing a great thing putting this out there for people that are willing to share their stories and give them their opportunity to share their journey and their continuous journey to everybody that's going to start one or is still in one or finish one. So you're broadcasting that out there, and that's what's great for me to see, because I've seen it. I'm like, oh, he's doing this. Oh, okay. But yeah, it was a great thing. It's a nice thing to get the word out there for folks that may struggle with doing this or may want to understand how to even navigate. You know, it's a nice thing. It's a nice way to go, and I appreciate it. It's been a blast, and I appreciate you doing this for me and for those who have come before you, and for those in the future of even coming out or potentially doing other things based on the spectrum. And I appreciate it. It's a nice thing you're doing.
Well, I appreciate you giving us the vulnerable side of your story, because I think that is exactly what helps motivate and move people.
Yes, definitely. No problem.
Kendrick Willis.
Yes.
Thank you again.
You're welcome. Anytime.
And we'll chat, I'm sure, later.
Yes, we will. Definitely.
Maybe over a game of golf.
Maybe.
And you have to wear was it a flamingo hat that you won last time?
Oh, my gosh.
I wasn't even going to bring this up, but I think that was the grand prize.
That was I think I threw that thing away.
No, you didn't.
I did. Because I literally thought about it once. I thought of you, and then I'm like, did I throw that thing away? I think I threw it away because the thing didn't fit. It didn't fit me. So that's why I was like, why am I still using this? But I promise you, I'll probably get another one that I actually fit. But
there you go.
And it was $10 in there too. I think that's what it was as well, with a glitter bag.
That's right.
Yeah, I barely won that. That was really close. I was, but I guess I got lucky.
That's how you win golf games.
I guess so.
Kendrick Willis. Mm-hmm. Thanks again.
You're welcome.
The Latter Gay Stories podcast, your opportunity to better understand the intersection of sexuality and reality, where it meets at LDS Street and LGBTQ Avenue. Again, we want to thank Kendrick for sharing his story. And if you have a short story you want to share as well, we invite you to contact us at the Latter Gay Stories podcast, and we'll get you taken care of. We would love to hear your story, however it relates, on the LGBTQ LDS spectrum. It gives us an opportunity, as Kendrick said, to better understand this experience for those who have come before and those who will lay future trails and paths and blaze new trails for those who are just coming out. It's an exciting time to see things unfold. We talked a little bit about what's happening at BYU and the honor code and handbook changes and so many things happening in the LGBTQ world. Sometimes I like to say it's strike while the iron's hot, where there's so much attention on this topic. It's important to share episodes like these. It's important to interact and become familiar with a community that leads to more grassroots change. We've learned in the church that many changes, especially when it comes to policy and revelation, happen from the bottom up, not necessarily the top down. And it's the grassroots bottom part of the church, and especially within the LGBTQ movement, that will make big differences and big sweeping changes within the church. And because you're participating and watching and being involved in topics like this, you are part of that change, and we appreciate it. If you want to continue helping us spread this message and building bigger and stronger bridges between the LDS and LGBTQ community, we invite you to make a donation to this podcast. There are two simple, easy ways of doing that. First, by logging on to our website at lattergaystories.org and clicking on the Donate tab. You're also able to send us a Venmo donation. Either on the website or through Venmo, you can make monthly donations that help us support this podcast. No salaries, no payment, just it helps us to pay for all kinds of things like hosting fees and listing fees and broadcast fees and travel and the expenses associated with producing episodes just like this. The other great and free and easy way of helping us is by sharing episodes, commenting, and liking wherever you find this podcast. If you are listening to it on an audio version, we invite you to subscribe to the channel. And if you are watching this on a video version, we invite you to like this movie, like this video, also share it with your sphere, and even make a simple comment that helps to spread awareness and create awareness surrounding this topic. Again, we want to thank you for joining us on this episode. If you have any questions, and either for myself or the guest, feel free to comment, post them below, or visit our website and send us a quick email through the contact tab. The Latter Gay Stories podcast is your opportunity to continue writing your Latter Gay story.
This episode is a production of Latter Gay Stories. We are always looking for new friends. Give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Latter Gay Stories. The podcast is made possible because of generous donors like you. Your donation gives us the ability to build bigger bridges by producing more Latter Gay Stories. Want more? Find this episode and others online at lattergaystories.org.